Greetings, horror fans, and welcome to episode 211 of Frightmares. I'm your host, Austin Proctor, and joining me today via the internet is my good buddy, Michael Viers of the Shameless Picture Show. How are we doing today, buddy? Oh, we're dancing. I like it.
I'm dancing.
You've got your raspy, deep voice today because you've...
sick boy voice.
Would have been perfect to read those Giallo titles, but that's okay.
The Bloodstained Butterfly.
And we're going to be doing some Giallo films, actually, for Slashtober, so get ready for that, all you Giallo fans. We've got some good ones picked out, but today...
Giallo-ctober.
Ooh, I like that. I might have to do that next year.
Giallo-ctober. It sounds like the name of a demon from a movie. I am Giallo-ctober.
Call Ed and Lorraine Warren. I gotta get that son of a bitch captured. Sadly, we're not doing any Giallo today. We are doing a movie from 1979 called Tourist Trap. And I think we both were big fans of this. I didn't look at your rating on Letterboxd. I can't wait for you to tell me. But it is ranked very high for me. This was a first watch for, but well, okay. You said to ask you about it, so tell me your history with this film.
I don't necessarily have a really great story. I just figured it's worth it's content. This movie I've been aware of for a long time because when I started delving deeper into the horror genre, especially in high school and in college, you know, you can't talk about low budget filmmaking without talking about Charles Band.
Oh, yeah.
And I will say my first Charles Band movie was a shitty little piece of shit called I don't say things like that often, so I can show you how much I disliked that movie. Called Doll Graveyard.
It's like
low budget for I can't think of the name of his company at the moment.
Full Moon.
I wanted to say Dark Castle, but that's the wrong company. for Full Moon, and it was like whatever their version of direct to DVD was, it just it wasn't working for me. You know, I hadn't seen any of his big hits yet, especially the stuff when he was making in the 80s when he actually had some fucking scratch.
So
when I started getting more into his the movies he produced and started to realize, oh, okay, he doesn't suck. I just saw the wrong first movie. I love you, Charles Band. I swear. But Tourist Trap is a movie I'd known about. You can't, that fucking cover. You don't forget that cover. But at one night, me and my wife, we tried watching it back when Joe Bob Briggs did his original marathon. Because it was the first movie he showed. And just for whatever reason, we were tired or whatever, not super into it. So we started watching, never went back to it. Said that you invited me to be on this show. I'm like, fuck yes. I wanted to watch Tourist Trap anyways. But you know me, I sometimes need a reason to watch something.
Yeah.
Like, because there's so many other things I want to watch. Sometimes, like, the thing that's most obvious that's right in front of me is not what I'm going to pick.
Right.
So it's like sometimes I love having a reason to watch or sometimes rewatch.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, like, I don't sit around and just watch Evil Dead, you know, on loop. But if I know I'm going to be talking about it, then that's my excuse to rewatch.
Exactly. Yeah, well, that's why I like being on your show, because there's movies I had either never heard of or movies that I had heard of and haven't watched, and now I'm like,
I force you to get out of the horror genre whenever you're on my show.
And I appreciate that.
You want to watch Raging Bull with me?
And I'm like, you know what? I've heard of it. Fuck it. Let's do Raging Bull. So yeah, the same thing kind of goes for me. I've always seen, like, yeah, you don't forget this title card. It's a very upsetting title card. And I had seen it throughout Shudder and all these other places hundreds of times. Yeah. And just never, for some reason, just never took the time to watch it. This is something I think deserves a 4K or at least a Blu-ray release, because I tried to track it down. It's kind of hard to find, and the quality on Shudder is not the greatest. So
no, those elevated black levels were annoying the shit out of me.
Yeah. So I would love for Vinegar Syndrome or maybe Arrow to do a Tourist Trap. But
hell, I'll even be fine with Scream Factory. I know they're not everyone's favorite company, but yeah. Someone needs to put this fucking shit out.
Some boutique label is all I need. That's all I require.
I'm still, speaking of Charlie Band-Aid, it's his full name. Band-Aid. Charles Band-Aid is his full name. Don't quote me on that. I'm still upset that I missed that. I just didn't have the money, but I'm so upset I missed that Arrow box set of like the Full Moon titles, like Robot Jocks and shit like that. I'm so upset.
Oh, the, The Empire of Screams one?
Yeah. Empire's his company, too.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Yeah, good grief.
Empire's his company. That's when he's making some really interesting shit. Moonbeam is his company where he's making kids' movies. One of my all-time favorites, Remote, which is a Home Alone knockoff directed by Ted Nicolau, who was the editor on this film.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Coming in with the hard facts.
I'm really upset that I missed that, and I refuse to pay scalper prices. Because a lot of times, like when they did like the, I'm sorry, I'm just going on tangents right now.
No, it's like 10 a.m. My time, 9 a.m. your time. Yeah, it's morning time. We're up. We're ready.
Yeah. I don't remember what I was gonna say. When they did the the guy who did Blood Feast. I'm struggling to think of his name.
Herschel Gordon.
Yeah, Herschel Gordon Lewis, like when they did his box set, they eventually did individual releases. So I'm hoping they do some individual releases for this so I can finally I want them all, but I want Robot Jocks, goddammit.
Yeah, it's kind of weird that they did them all in one, and then I didn't get it and it sold out so quickly, but luckily my friend Matt had a friend that had an extra copy and sold it to me like for just above, so it was like $80. He gave it to me for like $100 and I was like, I'll take $100 because that's not bad. So I almost missed out on it. If he didn't have that copy, I'd be sitting here fucking, you know, kicking myself over
it. I try not to let FOMO rule my life.
But that shit went so quickly, though. I did not expect that.
That was faster than vinegar syndrome numbers. Yeah. Like sometimes I forget why people forget about Arrow.
I understand.
Arrow does consistently great shit, and like they're always putting out good stuff. And I don't know if it's because they usually do like higher numbers of releases or something. I don't know, but I don't feel like they're not usually in the FOMO game.
Yeah, usually
they're not vinegar syndrome where it's like, man, if you don't pick this up during this sale, you're probably gonna miss out.
It's gone. So, but luckily, I mean, not luckily, hopefully one day we will get a Tourist Trap release because this is something I would love to own physically.
One buy for me if it happens.
Oh, yeah, without question. Give me a big box set with a poster and a slipcover and whatever. I'll fucking buy it. I don't care. Before we do Tourist Trap, I've got some information, some news. We just watched the Exorcist Believer trailer because you had not seen it. So let's talk about that really quickly. First thoughts for me, I don't know. It's not rated yet. I'm very hesitant about it. Scott Teams is writing it. We all know how I feel about him, but at least David Gordon Green is involved. The trailer looks spooky, but I'm not holding my breath. Now, I'm also not a huge fan of the original Exorcist. I appreciate it. Oh, okay. Like, I appreciate what it did. I have respect for it, but I'm not even that big on it. So I am probably going to be in the camp that likes this one more. However, I do love Exorcist 3. That one is fucking awesome. So first thoughts about the trailer for Exorcist Believer. What are you thinking about this?
So like you, I'm not the biggest fan of the original Exorcist. Once again, don't hate it.
Yeah.
I've just liked it less each time I've seen it.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I think it's fine. Like, as someone who doesn't really like exorcism movies and someone who does not have religious trauma in terms of what types of things scare me, it's fine.
Yeah.
Like I said, I respect the shit out of it. And I'm never going to say it's a bad movie just because I personally don't like it. I just like with this new one, I don't normally say this as a negative thing because I like quite a few movies that this company puts out, but it feels very Blumhouse-y.
Yeah.
Which is not necessarily a bad thing because I'm not a Blumhouse like lately there's been like, I think you're on the same like A24 like meme group that I'm in.
Oh yeah.
It is one of the most cringy fucking groups ever. But a lot of times, things come down simply to like A24 versus Blumhouse, which is, I don't know why we're putting these fucking companies against each other.
Yeah. I mean, besides the fact that they are kind of, I mean, Blumhouse is kind of indie. They do give like indie directors more of a spotlight.
Indie, yeah.
But they also work directly with Universal. So they also have a huge budget sometimes. But
well, Universal handles their distribution. Blumhouse is the producer, and their whole thing is they keep, at least this used to be their model. I can't speak to it now, but their whole thing was the reason they could get so many films made is they kept the budgets so low.
Right, yeah.
Then Universal would handle the distribution and the marketing, so that way it was kind of an interesting production model.
Okay.
But ultimately, where I feel weird about it is bringing David Gordon Green in. I am in the camp where I actually like his Halloween trilogy more than I dislike it.
Yeah.
I think it's actually, I don't care what anyone says, it's three of the stronger Halloween entries, because that series is inconsistent as fuck. And that's coming from someone who absolutely loves each one of them.
Yeah.
But like the fact that they're already slated to do two of these Exorcist films, and like I,
oh, it's supposed to be a trilogy.
Yeah, like he is a really interesting filmmaker, and none of what makes him an interesting filmmaker is really coming out in these horror films. Hmm. We each Halloween movie, I like them more each one they make for those Halloween movies, is because they start becoming more and more a David Gordon Green horror film. Like Halloween Ends is what I wanted his first Halloween to be.
Oh, really?
In terms of, like, he is just a really interesting indie filmmaker who makes really interesting films that are kind of off the beaten path. And I just think that he started shedding that mold a little bit more as each film would go on.
Yeah.
I don't know how to feel about this. Like, I don't have a lot of connection to the original movie or the original franchise. I don't think possession stories are all that interesting. I feel like there's not a whole lot that can be done. And like, I don't know if we need an Exorcist trilogy, but I want to be, what's the word I'm looking for?
Optimistic.
I want to be optimistic and I want to be proven wrong.
Yeah.
But like, so I remember reading somewhere once upon a time that one of David Gordon Green's favorite filmmakers is a filmmaker by the name of Terrence Malick. For those of you who are not familiar with Terrence Malick, he did films like Days of Thunder, Tree of Life, Badlands. I want to see the guy whose favorite filmmaker is Terrence Malick bringing that inspiration to a horror film and not just giving me horror films that all look and feel the same.
Okay. Well, yeah, and the thing is, but like, this trailer...
It could be the trailer.
Yeah, that's true. It could just be the trailer. Sometimes trailers are bad in the sense that they don't show how the movie will actually be, or sometimes they overshow, but I don't think they're oversharing with
which
the trailer.
Which is why I don't usually watch them, because there's been so many times where I've watched a trailer and had no fucking interest in it, and then I saw the movie and it's completely... Like, once again, one of my favorite examples is the movie Drive. The Drive trailer showed you every story beat that happens in that film, but they don't show you the way in which those story beats are going to be told. They don't tell you the vibe and the filmmaking artifice that comes in it, which is the reason I stopped watching trailers for the most part.
Yeah, I pretty much don't watch them either. Unless I'm in the theater, then it's kind of hard to.
I don't run away from them. I'm not like, oh, the trailer. But I don't scope out for them. Like, I'm not one of those people like, oh my God, a new Star Wars trailer is dropping today.
I have to look at
3 seconds of new footage. Like, I don't care.
There's some that pique my interest, and this was one. I was like, let me just get a feel for it. And to me,
if something piques my it's a movie I have literally nothing about. Like, sometimes I watch like 30 seconds to get an idea of visuals, like the idea of what the visuals of the film look like, and then that's it. That's all I need.
Yeah, but
Lost are the artists of the teaser trailer.
Because this one to me, it just looks like every other possession movie. I don't know what they're gonna bring new to the table. I mean, if you've seen one possession movie, you've kind of seen them all. Yeah, you know? So that's where we're at. That's releasing on October 13th, I believe, this year. So that's coming up pretty quick. And while we're on the subject of The Exorcist Believer, HHN just dropped every fucking house in Scare Zone yesterday, so that's weird, because usually they kind of build up with announcements, but we are getting an Exorcist Believer house.
Of course we are.
Of course, which is pretty interesting. So they've already announced The Last of Us and Stranger Things 4. We're also getting Exorcist Believer, Chucky, Ultimate Kill Count, which he's never had a house before, at least in Orlando, so that's really cool, because I love Chucky, and this is actually going to be inspired by the sci-fi series and the cult classic films. Then we've got Universal Monsters Unmasked. They've been doing Universal Monsters for like the past 4 years now. I'm kind of tired of them, but I mean, at the same time, I do love Universal Monsters, so it's like kind of a...
Think about it this way, Austin. There are definitely people like yourself who go every single year, but I feel like they keep bringing them back because there's always going to be new people.
Exactly.
And Universal and Universal Monsters, they're synonymous with each other. So yeah. I think it's always a safe bet for newbies.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's their own property, so they can do whatever they want with it. And honestly, last year, the Universal Monsters one last year was one of my favorites, and so that's definitely why they keep bringing them back. They're a hit. It'll draw people, and like you said, for people that go every year, it might get annoying, but for people that go, you know, once every couple of years, or
I've never been, so
yeah, like, or never been,
I would want to see the Universal Monsters.
Yeah, so We're getting Universal Monsters Unmasked, and then Originals. I'm going to read a little snippet of what the Originals are, because I don't really need to give you the, you know, the backstory on Chucky, Exorcist, and Universal Monsters. So for the Originals, we have a demented late-night circus led by an evil ringmaster and notorious icon looking for human souls to fuel his dark intentions in...
notorious icon.
Dr. So Oddfellow, Twisted Origins.
Okay.
A horrific twist to a frightening yet familiar tale and sinister battle between fire and ice in Dueling Dragons, Choose Thy Fate. I don't know how they're going to do a Dueling Dragons house, because that was a roller coaster at Islands of Adventure. So
I don't know, but I kind of want like the Scott Pilgrim Battle the Band sequence when it's like the dragons.
Yes! Oh, that would be cool. So I don't know how they're going to do that. I guess I'm hoping, because they used to do mazes. I think there was one when the first year I went where you could go two different ways. So that would be cool if you could like choose your own adventure kind of thing.
Fatality.
Yeah, I know they've done it before. So we'll see. Next up, we have blood-soaked campgrounds deep in the trenches of the mountains where vicious, bloodthirsty monsters have returned with a vengeance in Yeti Campground Kills.
Okay, I'm in.
Yeah.
So a couple things. One, I love any sort of camp-themed movie or slasher, and I fucking love Bigfoot and Yeti.
Yes. I'm in. We had a Yeti house a couple years ago, and it was one of my favorites, so I think...
If I could afford to, one, not only get tickets... but to fly down there and to put myself up, I would definitely be coming down for this. But
you put we can put you up here. You've got a place to stay. And
well, yeah, but we still have to get the dogs watched. Get
flight,
and
it's a whole thing. Let's see. Up next, we have Selling Their Souls for Fame in The Darkest Deal, where they quickly learn a deal can be more than they bargained for. That is very fucking not informative. And then last but not least, we have a colonial cult looking to slaughter those who dare refuse to worship the Blood Moon in Blood Moon Dark Offerings. So those are your 10
vague title with a vague subtitle.
Exactly. Those are your 10 houses. Five scare zones. We've got come face to face with the devious legend who is promising immortality for those who dare to enter Dr. Oddfellow's collection of horror. So he not only has a house.
Wait, Dr. Oddfellow's collection of horrors?
Yeah. Your horrors.
Horse?
Horrors.
Or horrors?
Horrors.
Okay. I was like, because this word will change
a lot of things.
This entire situation.
I have a hard time saying horror, so it always comes out.
I do too. And that's the only reason I make fun of people, because I do the same thing. I've started adding an A, saying horrors.
Horrors. Okay, there we go. Just
like add an horrors.
Pirate horrors. Okay. Cower in fear as the signs of the Zodiac come to life. That's not pirate themed. In Dark Zodiac, where Dr. Oddfellow uses his powers to transform the Zodiac signs into horrifying horoscope creatures. So apparently Dr. Oddfellow is like a new fucking icon, I guess, because he's now in three places. That's new. Venture into Jungle of Doom Expedition of Horror, where Dr. Oddfellow's twisted and bizarre experiments combine elements of nature and animals to create vicious jungle creatures looking to satisfy their cravings. Wow, okay, so he's definitely a new icon. Two more here. Attend a music festival crashed by bloodthirsty vampires let loose by Dr. Oddfellow in Vamp 69 Summer of Blood. So Dr. Oddfellow's fucking this whole place up. And then, last but not least...
69 style.
69, yeah. And this one takes... It's supposed to... I've seen the setup for it already, because they're already putting stuff out. It looks just like Woodstock, so it's going to be like vampire stock, I guess, for 69 of...
But at night.
Yeah, but at night. Last but not least, stumble upon Dr. Oddfellow's crates and cages that once housed monsters of all kinds who have escaped in pursuit of chaos in Shipyard 32, Horrors Unhinged. So, that is your HHN lineup for Orlando. No fucking clue what's going on in California. I don't live there. I don't care. So, if you want to get that information, you're going to have to go to the website, HalloweenHorrorNights.something.com. They have all the stuff there. But that is HHN Orlando. Probably not going to be able to go this year because it's just too fucking expensive. And I have a tiny baby at home who needs my attention 24/7. So, let's see. I've got one more bit of horror news because I want to... I want to get your thoughts on this, because this movie sounds like it's going to be one of the greatest this year.
I'm ready.
So, it's called Slaughterhouse, okay?
Ooh, that's a terrible title.
I know. This horror comedy is everything you've been waiting for. According to Variety, Gravitas Ventures has acquired the rights to a brand new horror comedy by the name Slaughterhouse. Written by Bradley Fowler and directed by Matthew Goodhue, the film sounds all but guaranteed to be one of the wackiest genre efforts this year. The plot synopsis goes: Slaughterhouse tells the story of college senior Emily Young, who aims to be voted president of her sorority. When she adopts an adorable sloth, she realizes the animal can serve as the house's new mascot and help her win votes, dubbing the animal Alpha. The new pet is a beloved addition to the sorority house until a series of deaths point toward the sloth as the prime murder suspect. The film becomes a survival story of sisters versus sloth as the girls wonder if they can make it out of Sigma Lambda Theta alive.
Slaughterhouse.
Okay, when you first gave me the title, I couldn't tell if it was slaughter as in slasher and author, or if it was, and I was like, that's probably what they're going for. But I was like, it'd be so much dumber if they went for the sloth, and then you told me it was a sloth.
I mean, what the fuck? Everyone knows that sloths move at a snail's pace, and the tagline is even better because it says, "Don't rush, die slow." So, I don't know.
I don't know, man.
Here for it.
I'm ready for it. I just don't know if it's how, like, I don't know what to expect from it.
I don't expect greatness. It's probably going to be along the lines of the Blood and Honey. It's going to be so stupid, or it's just going to be so dumb that it's fun. A killer sloth. I mean, geez, I feel like we're kind of scraping the bottom of the barrel here for ideas, because that is just, I mean, I guess they're trying to play off of Slaughterhouse as well, but Slaughterhouse, oh my goodness.
And then Sorority House is part of, like, there's a lot to unpack in Slaughterhouse. I'll tell you this now.
Okay, yeah.
Once Slaughterhouse comes out and is available where it can actually be watched, I will come on and do a bonus episode on Slaughterhouse.
God, let's do it.
And I will bring all my Shameless picture show, like, analysis skills.
All right. I can dig it. Now, I actually have one more thing here. I forgot. Something that sounds actually like a solid movie here. Hulu is releasing a sci-fi horror movie called No One Will Save You, and it's got a release date starring Caitlin Dever of Booksmart, which I'm excited for.
She was the main one, not Jonah Hill's sister, right?
Yeah, she was okay. The main one. She's also on that show.
I loved Booksmart, by the way.
I did too. Great. Yeah. She's also a star of Last Man Standing with Tim Allen. She's a big star in that as well. So this movie, dropping on September 22nd, described as a captivating sci-fi psychological thriller, the movie will arrive exclusively on Hulu in the U.S. For international viewers, it will be available on Star Plus in Latin America and Disney Plus in all other territories. Brian Duffield wrote and directed No One Will Save You, and he's no stranger to this genre. He previously wrote both of Netflix's Babysitter movies, which I actually just rewatched recently. So much fun.
He also wrote Spontaneous, which was one of the best movies that came out the year that came out.
Spontaneous.
It is the best high school romance movie about spontaneous combustion you'll ever see.
Oh my god. Okay, putting that on the list right now. He also wrote two underseen 2020 gems in the form of Underwater and Love and Monsters. Most recently, Duffield wrote
Spontaneous, which also
apparently, yeah, and
actually he directed Spontaneous as well.
Oh, okay, so he directed that one. Okay, all right. And then he also wrote and produced the animated Skull Island series for Netflix. As what his latest effort is all about, the synopsis is, No One Will Save You introduces Bryn Adams, played by Caitlin Dever, a creative and talented young woman who's been alienated from her community. Lonely but ever hopeful, Bryn finds solace within the walls of her home where she grew up until she's awakened one night by strange noises from decidedly unearthed intruders. What follows is an action-packed face-off between Bryn and a host of extraterrestrial beings who threaten her future while forcing her to deal with her past. So it sounds like these are going to be guilting her. That's the vibe I'm getting. We've got aliens with a conscience that are going to bring up bad memories. How rude.
I like alien movies. I was trying to write an alien movie at one point. So this sounds cool.
I'm all for alien movies. Caitlin Dever as well. I don't think I've seen her in a sci-fi movie before.
Ultimately, though, what I'm going to tell your listeners is, as soon as that movie drops, which you said, what, September 20th or something?
September 22nd to Hulu in the U.S.
Watch that shit right away, or else they're going to pull it.
But, oh, really? Well, do they do that?
Everything that's been going on with since Hulu and Disney Plus are pretty much like synonymous with each other now. If something doesn't perform, they just fucking get rid of it forever. So,
oh well, then
if
yeah.
you're gonna watch it, watch that shit right away.
I'll just put that shit on an endless loop.
Yeah.
All right. So that is all I have for horror news today. Some pretty good stuff. Keep
it. Yeah, this was a good one.
Yeah, it's been kind of lacking lately with the horror news. So
I know I noticed that.
Yeah. So well, it's because you know the SAG after strikes and all that stuff. So it makes sense. But yeah. So HHN fans, rejoice! All your houses and stuff are announced. Anybody who's a fan of sloths, rejoice for Slother House. And
anyone who's a fan of Carolyn Deaver, yeah, rejoice.
There we go. So it's going to be good. The rest of the year is shaping up to be a pretty decent year for horror. Because we keep getting all these announcements randomly about movies that are just dropping in October. I know a couple episodes ago, I was like, all these movies are just kind of coming out of nowhere, which I'm okay with, but it's just random that there's like no buildup. It's just like movie. So I'm like, all right, mark it on the calendar, everybody.
All right, Austin, I'm going to pitch this idea in your show right now. And you're going to become an executive producer once we do it.
All right.
Her name was what? Carolyn Deaver, you said?
Caitlin Deaver.
Caitlin Deaver. We're going to reach out to Caitlin Deaver's people and be like, hey, Caitlin Deaver's people, we want to do a reality show starring Caitlin Deaver where every week people write in and be like, Caitlin Deaver, we need your help with making spaghetti dinner or, you know, fixing drywall or just give her various tasks where she's going to come in and help people. And we're going to call it Leave It to Deaver.
Oh my god. I'm sure HGTV would get on board with that.
I know.
I think they could get behind that.
Caitlin Deaver, since I know you're the biggest fan of the Frightmares podcast, if you're listening, have my people call your people. My people are just me, so just reach out.
Where can they reach you? Shameless Picture Show on Facebook.
Shameless Picture Show on Michael_Virus, pretty much everywhere else. I'm Threads, though. I've only posted like two threads.
What's a thread? Oh my god.
Threads is Instagram's version of Twitter.
Oh god, I'm old man Proctor over here. Let me fucking put on my glasses.
Proctor.
Goodness. All right, let's move on to the IMDb roundup here. We're talking about Tourist Trap from 1979.
You need to get some like music of like, it needs to go like whoosh, or something like IMDb roundup.
I can do that.
Let's do it.
I was going to start adding in some different things next year on the show. I've got a new little intro I'm going to have. So some little sound effects would be nice. The IMDb roundup, like whip snap, like whoosh, okay.
Like, it has to be kind of like Woody's Roundup, like Woody's Roundup.
I have a whole soundboard here too that I can play the sounds live.
All these free ideas, man.
I know. Endless? Mm. Bountiful?
Cornucopia.
Cornucopia. There we go. A cornucopia of just good ideas from you, sir. Never gets old. I love it. Tourist Trap from 1979, released on March 16th of that year in the U.S. This movie is rated PG. Well, because there was no PG-13 just yet.
Y'all can thank Gremlins for that.
Yep, Gremlins, you can thank for that. There is no sex and nudity. We've got moderate violence and gore, no profanity, no alcohol, drugs, and smoking, and moderate frightening and intense scenes. I would argue that it's severe, frightening, and intense scenes. I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
There is some shocking shit.
This movie is legitimately scary, all things considered.
Especially for PG. So we've got creepy mannequins, impalement, telekinesis, strangulation, striking, and slamming. Weapons of choice are whatever you can fucking throw with telekinesis, a metal pipe, a shotgun, and an axe. Runtime of an hour and 30 minutes, listed straight as a horror, nothing else. Horror. There we go.
Horror.
Directed by David Schmoller, who also directed Catacombs and Puppet Master, 1989. He also wrote this movie. He also wrote Ghost Town, Catacombs, and Puppet Master. Alongside him writing is J. Larry Carroll, who also wrote a bunch of TV series, including 65 episodes of Dennis the Menace, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, 1989, and Star Trek, The Next Generation. He also edited The Texas Chainsaw Massacre from 1974.
Also worth mentioning, David Schmoller also directed the first Puppet Master movie. He directed Netherworlds, Crawl Space.
Yeah, he's done some stuff.
He went to the same university that Tobe Hooper did.
Oh, did he really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right.
In Schmoller, we trust.
Schmoller, I like that name. Produced by five people, two of which stood out to me. Erwin Yablans, who also produced Halloween 1 through 3, Prison and Arena, and then Charles Band. only produced 393 things. Basically everything.
Get off your ass, Charlie.
Yeah. Man. What are you doing? Basically everything Full Moon and Empire has ever done, but some notable ones like From Beyond, Dolls, Prison, Ghost Town, and again, many other things. He has a lot of composer credits.
Like,
or, a lot of producer credits.
There's a lot of fucking talent behind this movie. And we can talk really about that as we go, but like there's a lot of fucking talent behind this movie.
Yeah, even the composer, if I'm saying this right, Pino Donaggio.
Oh my God, I fucking love. He did one of my favorite scores of all time.
224 composer credits. Also did Carrie, Piranha, The Howling, Body Double, Catacombs, Two Evil Eyes, The Sect, Raising Cain, and then Seed of Chucky. Oh yeah, Blowout too as well. Yeah, I mean he's done so much shit. So much shit. This man is worked. And then we've got cinematography by a man named Nicholas Joseph von Sternberg, who also did the cinematography for X-Ray and Slaughterhouse Rock. There was a review you did. Was it Slaughterhouse Rock? Did you review that one on Shameless, or am I thinking of a different one? Or was that Hard Rock Zombies?
It was Hard Rock Zombies, but it came with Slaughterhouse Rock.
Okay.
Like I said, this is where I come in clutch on your fucking show, man, because like Nicholas von Sternberg is a fucking icon when it comes to low budget film. The man was the cinematographer on Dolomite.
Oh wow, okay.
He was also the cinematographer on P.D. Wheatstraw. He worked so much with filmmaker Graydon Clark and shot Wacko. He shot The Uninvited. He shot his movie Joysticks. This man was shooting a fuck ton. And if you ever pick up any of like the Graydon Clark Vinegar Syndrome discs, there's usually an interview with him on there, and he is a wealth of information.
Oh, I always love watching those little snippets of stuff like that. So yeah, Nicholas Joseph von Sternberg, powerhouse, and then it still keeps going. I mean, it keeps going. So you've got Ted Nicolau, who also edited Butcher Baker, Nightmare Maker, The Dungeon Master, Ghoulies, Trancers, and Robot Jocks. He also directed the Desert Pursuit segment of The Dungeon Master, Terror Vision, and Subspecies 1-4. So I mean, everyone also, behind this movie is fucking amazing.
He was also the sound guy on Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Oh my God. That is amazing.
Can I throw out some other interesting credits on this film? Since we're talking about them?
Go ahead. I usually only keep it to horror stuff, but obviously, please throw out any other wealth of information.
Well, you're missing one of the biggest.
What am I missing?
People in this film. Who? Robert A. Burns.
Who's Robert A. Burns?
Robert A. Burns is the art director, which I know a lot of people are like, "Oh, art director, whatever." Robert A. Burns. He created the fucking visual look of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre and the Hills of Eyes. He was the guy just picking up random carcasses of animals off the ground and building them into the fucking sets of Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Oh my God.
So he also did like the Microwave Massacre. He did
Massacre.
Reanimator. The man has done a lot. And then on top of that, you got fucking Hollywood royalty in this film, V. Neil. Name might not sound super familiar for a lot of people, but if anyone out there was ever into the TV show Face Off back when that was on Sci-Fi Channel, the makeup competition show, she was one of the guests, the hosts on that show.
Oh.
Because she's done everything from big movies like Pirates of the Caribbean and Spider-Man, but then she also got her start doing small little, you know, low budget films like this. She worked on Star Trek The Motion Picture. She has done so much. She worked on the fucking Lost Boys. She worked on Beetlejuice. She is she worked on Edward Scissorhands, but she also had time to work on this. So she made I think she made the masks in this movie.
Okay, yeah, and there is a lot of them. There's a lot of good creepy masks in this movie.
Yeah, so I had to throw out some love.
No, for I love
Robert A. Burns. I had to throw out some love for V. Neil. These are crew members that don't get talked about a whole lot. And then, you know.
Now I'm going to have to start diving into the art department now. I'm going to have to add that to my section here because, yeah, I like that. I like that information. So, starring, we've got some people here. Starring Chuck Connors as Mr. Slauson, who is also in 168 episodes of The Rifleman.
Yeah. Oh, my God, The Rifleman.
Which is streaming where? It's all on Tubi.
Oh, it is on Tubi. It is on Freevee. It is. If you want to watch The Rifleman, man, it's out there.
It's out. It's available. He was also in Soylent Green as Tab Fielding. We've got Jocelyn Jones as Molly, who only had 15 acting credits, did not recognize anything. I don't know if maybe you know her from something.
Jocelyn Jones is an interesting actress because she, yes, was not in a lot. However, she is went on to become a big time acting an acting coach.
Oh,
in
okay.
Hollywood. She formed the Jocelyn Jones Acting School, and I'm trying to see if I can find a list of like credits of like people that she worked with, but she has gone on to become one of the big name acting coaches in Hollywood.
Oh, okay.
She also studied under, weirdly enough, both, this is unimportant to anyone, but Sanford Meisner, his school, and then Lee Strasberg. And that's weird because of, I believe the Meisner technique is using internal, anyone who's an actor out there, please correct me. I'm probably getting them mixed up, but one form of act, one of them was using internal influences to create your performance. And the other one was using things around you and the people around you to create your performance. Hmm. So normally you don't mix them, but
okay.
But so the fact that she knows both styles is interesting.
That is impressive because, yeah, she only has 15 credits, so that is quite interesting. She went on to do that. We've got John Van Ness as Jerry, who was also in The Hitcher as Trooper Habscom, and Alligator 2, The Mutation, as Officer Trimble. He likes to play cops. Robin Sherwood is Eileen, who only has 10 acting credits, but was also in Blowout as Betty and Death Wish 2 as Carol Kersey. And last but not least, we've got Tanya Robert as Becky, who was also in The Beastmaster as Kiri. Estimated budget of $800,000, did not get a worldwide box office gross. This movie was filmed in Malibu, LA, and Agua Dulce, California, if I'm saying that correctly. You can watch this on Amazon with Freevee, Shudder, Peacock, and Tubi, so you can fucking watch this everywhere.
Pretty much everywhere you can watch The Rifleman.
Yeah, exactly. Movies that came out around the same time, we've got The Warriors, Mad Max, Dawn of the Dead, Alien, The Brood, Phantasm, Rocky 2, The Muppet Movie, The Amityville Horror, Apocalypse Now, When a Stranger Calls, and The Jerk. So pretty much every movie that I just mentioned is a fucking banger. Like, those were all such good movies. Did you have a specific horror moment, sir, that you really enjoyed? Yes,
since I'm all about factoids, I also want to mention for anyone listening out there, Tanya Roberts was also a Bond girl, and she played Donna's mom in That 70s Show.
Did she really?
Yeah.
I don't know how I missed that one. Okay.
Specific horror moments. I do. It's kind of a spoiler for later in the film.
We're just going to go ahead and I've been doing this lately where let's just go into it. So tell me about it.
There's going to be some spoilers, people. Yeah. If you haven't watched Tourist Trap, pause the episode right now.
Absolutely.
Or if you just don't care. Like, yeah. Maybe you're like me and like, spoilers don't necessarily ruin my enjoyment of a film. My specific horror moment, though, was I don't know how else to describe it other than the dog pile of mannequins.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Was that Tanya Roberts' character?
It was Molly.
Was it Molly? Okay. So it was Jocelyn Jones.
Yeah.
Okay. When she was up in the attic and all those mannequins were falling on top of her and like the eyes started moving and like they all started just moving ever so slightly. And you start wondering, are these mannequins alive? Is she imagining this? Is this telekinesis?
What's going on?
That was like, man, this movie's like legitimately fucking scary.
So mine is actually like the first scene 5 minutes into the movie, which we'll explain in a second because I'm about to talk about it in 5 seconds. Favorite kill for me was Molly. She didn't die. Hold on. That is incorrect. Oh my God. I don't know who my favorite kill is. Oh, it was fucking, it was Jerry. That was my favorite kill because he literally gets ripped apart like a mannequin.
Yeah, that was a good one.
When he was alive as a person, he just, his arms get ripped off and his head gets ripped off and he smashes him to the ground. And I was like, what the fuck just happened? So that was my favorite kill. There's not a lot of kills in this actual movie, but more so of being turned into mannequins.
And my favorite kill, and I think it was Becky, Tanya Roberts' character.
When the suffocation, when she gets suffocated.
Yes, yeah. they're putting the mask on her, and he's like going, explaining that's like, oh, you're not going to suffocate. Your heart's going to explode. I'm like, whoa.
Like, whoa. My favorite character was Molly, just because she I felt like she was the smartest of the bunch, because she was like not wanting to go explore and not going to do things. And I'm like, you're the smart one here. Yes, I understand.
I would say Molly is probably like my favorite character out of the good people.
Yeah,
but like I fucking loved Slauson. I love me some Chuck Connors.
Yeah, even though so he was
like it's hard for me to root against my boy Chuck Connors.
I know, right? It's you find yourself in this weird space where you're like you're kind of the bad guy, but I like you. You've got such charm to you, Mr. Chuck Connors.
You got moxie, Mr. Connors.
Yeah. Let's see. My least favorite character was Eileen. She was nothing but trouble. just always always wanting to get into shenanigans, always exploring. She kind of had that happen to herself.
Would it be fair to say my favorite character is Slauson, but my least favorite character is Davey?
Ooh, I like that. I like that. Yes, that is totally acceptable.
I probably agree with you, Eileen. It's like y'all got yourself. This man was just probably going to keep offering you Dr. Peppers, but you all had to go fuck this shit up. I don't know if he was going to kill anyone, but y'all had to fuck it up.
Y'all had to fuck it up. Yeah, they really did. My favorite line is not really a line, but it's the monologue when Davey is putting all the plaster onto Tina and basically saying how she's going to die by fright. That whole monologue was like, I'm legitimately uncomfortable right now. And he's like, your heart's just going to explode. And then you're not going to feel you're dead, but you're going to be dead. And I'm like, I don't like this. I'm uncomfortable. So it wasn't really a line for me. It was an entire monologue, and it was so fucking horrifying.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of what my favorite line was.
You shot me, bang, 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 bang.
Blanks. No. That was a great line, though, but that was not it.
Such a fucking great line.
It used to scare the hell out of kids and Yankee tourists.
Oh, yeah. In regards to the mannequin that comes to life and shoots a blank at them, that was pretty upsetting as well.
The Southern kids, they ain't afraid of shit, but them Yankee tourists, man, they're afraid of some shit.
You can get them easily.
Yeah. All right. So that one amused the hell out of me. Okay. And then I also liked later on when Davey's like, my brother makes me wear this stupid mask. Do you know why? Because I'm prettier than him.
Because I'm handsome.
Yeah.
All right. So let me give you the IMDb summary. Let me set the scene on the setup, and then we'll just kind of go into however we want to talk about this. So IMDb summary. Teenagers come across a shut-in psychopath with telekinetic powers. He proceeds to use these powers to slay them one by one, as well as animate the various mannequins he uses to keep himself company. So, literally, the opening shot is Woody. He's rolling a tire down the road towards a gas station. We cut back to Eileen sitting on the side of the road next to the car that's missing a tire because they got a hole in it. So, Woody has a spare tire where there's no air in it, so he's going to take it to the gas station to fill it up. And then a group of others show up, who was Molly, Becky, and Jerry. They pull up next to Eileen. Jerry tells Eileen he will never find a gas station on this old road, but, you know, he definitely does, even though if it does look derelict. Inside the gas station, Woody calls for someone to help, but no one answers, looks around, and you kind of hear these little sounds, so he keeps following those sounds, and he comes across a sleeping woman. Turns out it's a mannequin that literally springs up towards him, opens his mouth, and laughs. The door shuts behind him. The window cracks, but then shuts before he can, you know, get to it. And then another mannequin is just yeeted at the window next to him. So he approaches the only other door in there, and a mannequin flies out laughing like an insane person. And then the head of the mannequin that came through the window turns at him and starts to laugh as well. He manages to break a hole in the door, but something grabs him and won't let him go. And then this is when all the stuff in the armoire in that room starts to just throw itself at him, lights or bottles, everything. And then one of the metal pipes that was on the ground.
I have to say that scene is impressive, though, because like there was no good way to cheat that. So they're just throwing fucking shit at him. They're just throwing shit off camera. Just imagine Ted Nikolaj over there just like fucking throwing
bottles,
shit.
Throwing fucking shit. Yeah. So eventually a metal pipe that's been fluttering on the ground goes into his back, and it's blood starts to pour out, and he doesn't even scream. He just writhes in pain. So that's how this movie opens. And I'm sitting there, I had to pause it because I was like, this is fucking PG? Like, I know PG-13 wasn't around yet, but that was so fucking, and it was in the middle of the daytime, completely spooky. So that's how this movie starts. And of course,
there's a really underrated quality to daytime horror moments.
Oh, yeah. especially because I wasn't expecting it to be that spooky. I just figured he would have gotten caught and taken away. But no, just all the events that happened in that room completely caught me off guard. And that's why it was my horror moment, because I was like, good God, they are really starting off with a bang here. So they all eventually try to go find Woody, and they spot his tire on the side of the road, and then you see Slauson's Lost Oasis dead ahead. They continue down, but don't seem to notice the sign that says closed to the public, so I would have probably turned back then. And then I love how all the girls, they wander off because the car has died, and they go skinny dipping for whatever reason in the watering hole, and this is when Mr. Slauson shows up for the first time. Doesn't he have a rifle in his hand, too?
Yes, he does.
The rifle man shows up with the rifle.
So for all of you listening, I'm, as you can tell, I'm a huge Chuck Connors mark, but I fucking love the Rifleman. And just for anything of that intro alone, the show begins, you just see a rifle on Chuck Connors' hip, and it's one of those like I don't know what they're called, like the fast action, like,
yeah,
repeaters. It's like they're one of the repeaters, and he's just like, and then the camera just pans up to his face looking all stern, and it's like, the Rifleman. It's fucking the best.
You sent me that video, which is so funny, of someone shooting, trying to shoot the cans, and he misses all of them, and then he comes over like, pam, 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 and I'm like, all right, I'm interested in this show, just from the fucking 5-second clip you sent.
Yeah, fucking Chuck Connors.
Chuck Connors. It's funny too, because he's telling the girls, they're like, why are you here? And they're like, oh, we're looking for our friend. He's like, oh, I haven't seen him. And then he goes into this whole thing about how, you know, no one comes here anymore because they built a new highway, which bypassed the town. And I was like, okay, Psycho. That's exactly from Psycho. But then he's like, all right, ladies, I'd get out of here before nighttime comes, because this place fills up with water moccasins and you don't want to be here when that happens. So of course they decide to leave. And, they go back to the car where Jerry is, who can't seem to get the car to work. Mr. Slauson's like, oh, just come on to my little museum. We'll get you all fixed up. And I'm like, this is where the movie's going to go downhill immediately. He's going to go back to the museum, and it's not going to go well. And I love the Lost Oasis, because it's like, what the fuck is that place? He lives in there. There's a little bed back there.
It's weird, because it's like, it's simultaneously like a natural like spring for swimming, where he used to charge people 25 cents per day.
Oh, yeah, to swim there, yeah.
Swim there.
I guess the water moccasins are free.
Yeah, but now it's like also like an old West museum, but it's also kind of not, because it can't really commit to its old West theme.
Yeah, exactly.
It's kind of like a weird, kind of a wax museum. It's so strange to me.
Yeah, because you've got mannequins that move, so those are like mechanical, and then you've got the wax figure of his wife that's in there that he claims that he made, and it's a very odd place to go in. And of course, the kids are all kind of, they're
he's got a Dr. Pepper machine that doesn't seem to work, because he has to keep opening it from the side.
Open it from the side, yeah. So he gives them all Dr. Peppers and tells them that his brother made all these mannequins, and that, you know, folks out in the city hired him away because he got so good at it. And this is when Eileen notices that big house out back, where she's like, oh, is that where you live? He's like, no, that's where Davy lives. And he's like, Davy Crockett, that is. And I was like, I feel like you're
him
lying.
Him and General Custer couldn't get along, yeah. So I separate them.
It's like, you're just lying, you big old goober.
And it's like, I remember looking to a man, is like, he's not well.
Yeah, he's not well right now. I'm very worried about him. And I noticed that Slauson's character had this limp, and I feel like that was done intentionally because of the reveal that we'll get to in just a minute here. But of course, you know, he warns them to not go out there because of the coyotes. So you've got coyotes and water moccasins just loose and rampant in this part of wherever the fuck USA. But of course,
that checks out. Yeah.
Yeah. But of course, Eileen's like, I'm gonna go over there. She's like, I'm gonna go see if they have a phone. And she goes by herself. Mistake. She gets inside hearing people, and you know, the people aren't people. I don't know how they're talking, but they're mannequins that are speaking.
Well, one thing this movie does so fucking well throughout this movie is, and especially because of the way that the film's cut, thanks Ted Nicolau, is the way that it like will it'll cut from a mannequin to human.
Mm-hmm.
So effectively, mm-hmm. where and it's so quickly that you're like, wait, what did I just see? Is this person real? Are they not? And it's just a fucking chef's kiss.
It's very well done, because there are a lot of times in this movie where that happens and you question, okay, wait, was that a mannequin or was that a real person? Mm-hmm. But it's done intentionally. So she does find a phone, but it's too late because the, I guess we can, at this point, I assumed it was Davey, but you, like, you don't know who it is at first, but someone behind her with that fucking creepy mask, curly hair. It's very like Texas Chainsaw.
It definitely has some inspiration.
Yeah. So he appears behind her, like throws a chair under her legs and forces her to sit down and then chokes her with the kerchief that she stole off the mannequin. Very, very well done scene. Very creepy. So, you know, at this point, okay, Davey, if that is Davey, he's, I guess, you know, because he said that Davey wasn't there. Well, he said Davey lived in the house, but he said his brother, you know, doesn't live here anymore. So you're like, okay, is Davey his brother? What's going on here? I'm not sure exactly what's going on. So Slauson's like, this part was so funny to me. Did you notice this part when Slauson comes back in and's like, Jerry couldn't fix the car, so he took the truck to town. Like, why would he, what? Why would Jerry go to, where? How does he even know where town is? And the girls were like, oh yeah, but no problem. So I thought that was kind of funny. They didn't bat an eyelash at Jerry just taking a truck in the middle of the night.
They know what Jerry's likes again. It sounds like good old Jerry just fucking leaving us behind so we can go get some Yoo-Hoo and a moon pie.
Yep. So they didn't seem to care about that. We find out that, you know, Mr. Slauson's wife died in his arms very young due to cancer, which we find out is bullshit later on.
What?
What? She didn't die of cancer? And then he apologized.
Cancer is a bullet from my gun.
It's a rifleman. So notices Eileen's missing. He's like, oh my God. Okay. Goes out to look for her. And then once inside, I love how he comes across Eileen, who's turned into a mannequin now, which is such a cool fucking thing. She was just sitting in the chair and now she's, I mean, you can tell it just looks like a mask on her, but she's now a mannequin. So Davey has turned her into a mannequin. And, while he's out, Becky and Molly are snooping around and they find the photo album of his wife. And they're like, wow, that looks really familiar. It looks like that lady over there made of wax. And and she's like made out of a very, very flesh-like material, which freaks them out. And I would be too.
I know, because remember they touched her face and it's like, oh, she feels real.
She feels real. So they're like, oh God. So he tells the girls when he comes back too, he's like, oh, I didn't find Eileen, but you should stay put because I'm going to go look for her. And I'm like, these girls are like, y'all got to get the fuck out of there. So of course they disregard that and go to look for them herself. And they approach what they think is Eileen and Woody in the house. Well, Molly turns around because she's smart, but Becky enters the room full of mannequins, convinced that Eileen is in there. And, she pulls back a sheet and it's not Eileen. And the man that attacked Eileen is now behind her and gets her. But he doesn't kill Becky. He throws her downstairs with Tina, who I'm like, who the fuck is this person coming in very late to this movie? Tina is someone that Davey found at the gas station as well. And he plans to turn her into a mannequin, as that's just what you do, apparently, if you're Davey, who is a very, very, very creepy man with a very creepy mask. And the mask changes throughout the movie, which kind of threw me off because there's a point in time where Molly is the only one left and she gets chased away by what do you think is Davey, but the mask is different and the hair is blonde. So was that still supposed to be?
I think so. I think he has different personalities. I also love, it's kind of like a Leatherface thing where he's got different personalities for different masks, different situations. I also love that, like, when he has, like, I call it his pompadour mask, when he's got, like, the slick back hair and everything. It looks like a Chuck Connors mask. It looks like a shitty Chuck. It looks like a shitty, like, rifleman's, like, Halloween mask.
Yeah, because he's got a few different faces. He comes down when they're going to have a party and he's got his hat. He's like, how do I look? And so a whole bunch. I'm not going to go into too much more with the actual plot. But at the, you know, at a certain point, you've got Becky and Jerry.
Yeah. At some point, you're just like, person gets chased. Person jumps through.
Yeah. So down in the basement, there's Becky. There's Jerry. There's Tina. Tina gets turned into a mannequin by putting plaster on her face. And then Molly's all alone and she gets scared away by what you assume is Davey, and then gets picked up when she's going down the road. She gets picked up by Mr. Slauson. This is where it gets confusing because Davey and Mr. Slauson are, he just seems to be like, he seems like he can teleport in a way, because when Molly and Mr. Slauson get back to the museum, you know, she's like, he's like, I'm going to call the cops. You know, we're going to get them here. But she's standing outside with a shotgun and he's like, shoot anybody that, you know, isn't supposed to be here. Well, Mr. Slauson goes into the museum and Davey comes around the back.
Oh, and that was a good moment of tension too, because she's over there screaming for Mr. Slauson. And then you finally hear the music, cause he's going to put the radio in the window.
Yep. And she's like, oh, thank God.
And then, like, that's when Davey shows up. It was just such a great little moment. And, like, and Jocelyn Jones really sells those moments of fear. Like, she's so fucking good in this movie.
I thought she was legitimately terrified. Yeah, because she's sitting there kind of trembling and yelling and screaming.
Like, the way that her and Chuck Connors play off each other in this movie is great.
Very well done. Yeah, so when Davey comes back around, she holds the gun to him and shoots him twice. And I'm like, okay, I feel like homie would be dead. But Davey gets up and he's like, bang, bang, you shot me with blanks. So she just smacks him on the head with the gun, like the butt of the gun, just boom.
That was the best moment. She's like, fine, fuck you.
Boom. And then the mask breaks and you can see that it's Mr. Slauson.
Oh, it's such a great reveal to the way that the mask breaks and the way just, it falls, like, off his face.
Rips it off.
I had that thought anyways, because like whenever Davey was talking, it's like, it sounds like Chuck Connors.
Yeah.
It just kind of looks like Chuck Connors, but the reveal was so good. It's still like, oh shit, it actually is Chuck Connors.
It actually is him. Yeah. Because I think he was
no,
how dare you to betray me. Cause I think he fakes that limp as Mr. Slauson, because there was no limp on Davey. No. So I think to differentiate, I think he was faking that limp. So it's at this point you realize that Mr. Slauson is Molly. You know, there's a whole bunch of back and forth.
Mr. Slauson is Davey.
What did I say?
You said Mr. Slauson is Molly. I'm like, whoa, I don't remember that twist.
Oh, wait, sorry. No, Mr. Slauson is Davey. And then I don't even want to go into the whole third act, because there's a small dip for me, but then it kicks it right back up when Molly enters the house and Jerry and Becky are there as well. It goes fucking full tilt bonkers towards the end. So I'm going to leave that
bonkers.
I'm going to leave that for people to enjoy.
And then it has like one of my favorite ending frames of a movie.
Oh yeah. The ending frame is literally the greatest thing, because Molly actually does end up getting away. So she is the final girl of the movie. Nobody else makes it. And the last frame of her is her driving in the Jeep that's somehow fixed now. I don't know how it got fixed, but all of her friends are there, but they're mannequins. Oh, and it just
freeze frames. Yeah. It's
so good. Like, yeah. I'm
a sucker for a freeze frame finish anyways, but then it was like, oh, that's just so fucking twisted.
To do it so perfectly, I was like, man, that's one fucking hell of a freeze frame, and just such a bleak ending. She's like, I'm getting out of here, but I'm fucking taking my friends with me, mannequins or not. I don't give a shit. Fuck you, Davey / Mr. Slauson. So, I mean, dude, this movie fucking blew me away.
This movie rocked.
It rocked, dude. It rocked so hard. I was expecting a good, cheesy, campy little movie. It's not cheesy at all to me. I mean, there are some goofy moments, but it is unnerving. It is truly unsettling.
This movie hit so many sweet spots. One, I had to keep checking like the year this movie came out, because it came out like, what, 1979? It feels like it came out in 1969. Just has that like look to it where it looks older than it is.
Yeah.
Like, it kind of feels like it came out like a week after Blood Feast. It just has like
that feel
to it. But then like it has a really compelling and actually legitimately kind of sweet performance by Chuck Connors. He's completely unhinged in this film.
Oh yeah. And
apparently he wanted, since you know his career was on the downturn, he wanted to have a second coming as a horror actor.
Oh.
And I think he could have fucking done it.
Definitely.
But then also, like, very much like one of my all-time favorite movies, Christmas Evil. This movie just has this weird, like, art house sensibility to it that I find myself really loving. And a part of that is because David Schmoller spent some time in Mexico, and he had learned filmmaking from Luis Buñuel, who was a experimental art house filmmaker who made films of Dali. And then he also had made Jodorowsky. So he had made Alejandro Jodorowsky. So like he had learned filmmaking from these two fucking insane people. So like there's definitely some of that in his films.
Yeah. Okay.
Or in, and I think that is just kind of amazing.
No, yeah.
And then like the Pino Donaggio score works so well in this film. And I would say when it first, because I love Pino Donaggio, he made one of my all-time favorite scores in Blowout, and is one of the most like heartbreaking love themes I've ever heard. And when the movie first began, I was like, man, this score kind of sucks.
Oh, see, I thought it was kind of like jubilant and happy. I was like, ooh, this is fun.
I guess it just wasn't doing it for me. But then as it went on, it just started becoming better and better. And it actually made that stuff I didn't like as much even better, because like the way he's playing with themes, like, good shit.
Yeah, it was a good score. It was a good score. Everything about this movie to me was just like near perfection. Let's move into some post review stuff here. Taglines, I've got one. It is, every year young people disappear. That is a fact. Trivia: this film holds the distinction of being one of the few slasher films in the horror film history to receive a PG rating, as PG-13 rating would not exist for 5 more years. Correct. Mm-hmm. Director David Schmoller was startled when the film received a PG rating despite its disturbing subject matter and what he perceived as graphic violence. Schmoller stated in an interview with TerrorTrap.com that he felt that the film would have been more commercially successful had it received an R rating. The creepy laughter, which is prominent in the opening sequence, was created for the laughing hyena at the zoo in Lady and the Tramp, 1955, and was also used in Disney's It's a Small World attraction. Slauson's line, "Once they moved the highway, I'm afraid we lost most of our business," is directly lifted from the film Psycho, 1960. In that film, Norman Bates says this to Marion near the beginning. This film was shot in 24 days, which is pretty impressive. Goofs, couldn't find anything that was worthwhile. Rated 6.1 out of 10 on IMDb and a 3.1 on Letterboxd. 40% on the tomato meter and a 40% audience score. I gave this film 4.5 stars. I was just blown away by it. What did you give it?
I gave it 4 stars, but I can easily see that going up in time. And one thing I will say to listeners out there, and I'm not the only one who's noticed this, if anyone has seen from like 2006, the House of Wax remake, that is practically a beat for beat remake of Tourist Trap. So if you want to see what a Tourist Trap remake could be like, House of Wax from 2006 is actually not a bad one.
Yeah, I was going to say, this vibes very much like House of Wax. This vibes very...
And I liked House of Wax, I will say.
Oh, same. It vibes like Psycho, like House of Wax, and there was another one that I had in there that I can't remember, but it's, yeah, it's very reminiscent of those. But with a 4.5 and a 4, that is a Frightmare certified slap! That's what we're doing here. Similar movies according to Letterboxd: House of Wax, 2005. The Texas Chainsaw Massacre, 1974. Halloween, The Strangers, and The Texas Chainsaw Massacre, 2003. Similar movies according to IMDb: we have Maniac, Intruder, Happy Birthday to Me, The Burning, and Just Before Dawn.
I think it was just solid. And actually, I was telling Amanda that up until this movie, Maniac was my favorite movie to involve mannequins.
Maniac. Oh, yeah, yeah. So have you seen the 2012 Maniac with Elijah Wood?
Oh, I love them. I love them both.
Okay, yeah. I do love them both as well. Yeah, the 2012 remake is a very, like, that's how you do a remake. Plus, the cinematography in that movie is fucking unreal.
Yeah, incredible.
Did you happen to find a few funny or bad reviews?
I found some good ones.
Oh, let's go.
I copy and pasted them, so I don't always have their, like, star ratings.
Oh, that's
so
fine. That's fine.
One of them was, if you can't get away from mannequins, then you deserve to die. That was by Dingle Dust.
That's fair.
Most of these are actually negative reviews, because that's where you find the funnier reviews.
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine.
This one from Tim Smale. This film suffers heavily from WWW, i.e. Why? My advice, leave this whirlwind of weird ass insanity alone. This one's from Gino. They should remake this, but it takes place in Madame Tussauds wax museum, so I can see Arnie Hammer wax figure get possessed and eat someone.
Oh my god! Are these from IMDb or Letterboxd?
These are from Letterboxd. This one was by KYK. It's no House of Wax 2005, but I did scream and spill LaCroix all over myself.
Spill LaCroix all
And then finally, this one is actually a good review. They gave it like 4 stars. Always a good call to put your killer in jeans. It's night for the heroes, but for the killer, it's 2 p.m. on a Sunday, and he's running to Home Depot to pick up some mulch for the yard.
Oh, I should have gone first. Mine aren't nearly this good. Oh, Jesus. Okay. Oh, let's see.
Oh, and actually one last one by James Lugosi. Yeah. That damned highway, and then it's a mad like emoji.
Holy shit. Well, I might do these in backwards order where I show where I say mine first.
I came swinging with the reviews.
You got some good ones. 2 stars from Matt Speak of Cinescare. A few creepy moments and plenty of what the fuck, but overall just not good enough to hold interest like this fucking review. Number 2, 5 stars from Jane is a movie fan. Great. Now I'm scared of mannequins too. I'm with you on that one. I'm with you on that one. We've got 2 stars from Ryan Outcult. If you ever happen to suffer from automatonophobia, which is what I assume the fear of mannequins is, this movie must be pants-shittingly terrifying. But for everyone else, it just feels like a limp knockoff of The House of Wax and Psycho. Boo. And last but not least, we have 3.5 stars from Nick Detz. If you ever wondered what it would be like if Norman Bates had a weird mannequin and wax mask fetish and used telekinesis to animate these ungodly things into doing heinous acts, then this will be a terrifying little number for you. Good grief, people. So yeah,
I found one more.
Oh, please. End it on a good note.
This one is good Nico vibes. It's a bad review, but it makes me laugh.
Okay.
Fun concept, but looks like it was made for lunch money.
Give me your lunch money, punk. I got a fucking mannequin movie to make. Oh, goodness gracious. All right, Michael, where can the listeners hear the sultry sound of your voice on your podcast?
So if you want to hear my voice when I'm not sick, you can find my show, The Shameless Picture Show. We are at all of your favorite podcast apps of choice, but you can also find us on the Cinepunks Network at www.cinepunks.com. That's P-U-N. X
marks the spot.
So cinepunks.com, but I said we're on your favorite podcast apps of choice. You can find me on Facebook, just Michael Viers. It's V as in Victor, I-E-R-S. Same with the Shameless Picture Show, though. Let's be real, the way Facebook algorithms work, no one pays attention to the fucking page. Just find me and you can see all the shit. But then I'm also on Instagram, Michael_Viers and Shameless Picture Show, all one word. And then you can find me on TikTok, as you said in the last episode.
TikTok.
You can find me on TikTok at Shameless Picture Show.
Booyah. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and Slasher app at Frightmares Podcast. Our email is stayspooky@outlook.com. You can also follow me personally on Letterboxd at Dr. Proctor.
I forgot Letterboxd.
I'm
Virus 10 2008. So it's V as in Victor, IERS 102008.
10020 LMNOP. Yes, follow us on Letterboxd. Next week isn't really going to be next week because I'm releasing 2 episodes on Monday because fucking Monday falls on the 31st. So you get this episode and your bonus episode today. So there's no reason to say until next week, stay spooky. But until the next episode, which I don't even need to fucking give you a hint at since it's released, but it will be a creature feature from the 1990s. So until then, stay spooky.